Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all know that's how I like it. Give it to me straight. Give me some straight funk with no chaser. And you know that that is how I give it to you, right? As a matter of fact, when I say straight, everybody out there in the whole wide world that's listening, y'all say funk. Y'all ready? Straight. Straight. Okay, now we're ready to go. We got that over with. Welcome to Funk in the Afternoon, baby. You are tuned in to Everybody is a Star on Tribe Family Channel. And this is your favorite flavor, Patrice, C-H-O-C-L-E-T, Banks. Okay, so I'm going to get right into this interview today because we don't have a whole lot of time. And I just want to say I am a serious fan of our guest today. Now, this is a man who can sing a love song like no other. Which is, if you can sing a love song, you are number one on my list, and you're number two if you can cook. But that's another story. That's another story, and we'll talk about that later. So let's check this out, though. Let's see if my guest can cook and sing at the same time, okay? So without further delay, I'm excited to have as my guest today, Mr. Howard Hewitt. Yay! Welcome, okay. Howard.
How are you? How you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to join us today, because I know that you have a gig tonight. So I really, really appreciate you very much.
Well, I appreciate you, too. But I'm sorry to say that on the cooking side, I don't know. I make a great oatmeal.
Well, just tell me this. Can you sing and make the oatmeal at the same time?
I can sing and stir up
do
oatmeal
anything,
at the same
huh?
time.
Well, yes, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about right there. Okay, you get a gold star now. Okay, so we're gonna go ahead and we're going to just say, and let's start with, I like to get as much information about my guests as possible for my listeners, okay, because they want to know everything. So let's start with your hometown.
Hometown, born and raised in Akron, Ohio. And I left Akron when I was about 19, and I went straight to Los Angeles. I sat down at LAX with about $34 in my pocket. And
Okay, and wait like, a minute. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's shout out your schools. What school did you go to?
Well, at grade school, I went to Schumacher Grade School in Akron, Ohio. Then junior high or middle school, however you want to call it, was Perkins Junior High. And high school, graduated from Bookville High School in Akron. Went to Kent State for a little while, and that was it as far as schooling in Ohio.
Okay, all you people from Ohio, y'all just got represented, okay? So now, tell me this, Howard. What were your first musical influences like? When did music first, like, enter your consciousness? Like, do you remember how old you were? What was the first music you ever heard or anything like that?
Well, of course. I've been singing since I was, like, 10, 11 years old. And I mean professionally singing. We had a gospel group in Akron and back in Ohio called the Hewitt Singers, you know, and my mom was a major gospel promoter in the Akron Cleveland area. So she would bring everybody in from James Cleveland to Albertina Walker, Caravans to Pilgrim Jubilees, Bottleneck, Soul Stirs, everybody. And those were the first, that was the first introduction to music for me. And once we put the group together, once we put the Hewitt Singers together was myself, and I was the lead singer, and my three sisters backed me up, and we had a keyboard player, bass player. My brother-in-law played bass, and we had a drummer and a guitar player. And once we put the group together, of course, nepotism was alive and well in our family, as it should be. And so every show that my mom brought in, you know, of course, we opened up for those shows. So I opened up for acts like, you know, Bill Moss and the Celestials out of Detroit, and Pilgrim Jubilees, and all those people. And so, like, you know, that's how I started out. And then when we would come out of school, we would be in school during school months. But then in every summer, we would come out of school and we would hit like the Chitlin' Circuit, Gospel Chitlin' Circuit, up and down, you know, the Midwest and up through the, you know, East Coast and up through Canada, the East Coast of Canada. And it was a beautiful thing. I loved it. It was a great, great introduction to music. Akron, Ohio was the perfect foundation as far as music was concerned, because, you know, after that, when I was about 14 or 15, then I went into, you know, R&B, the whole R&B situation, and it was a wonderful, wonderful, like I said, foundation. I'm a foundation cat. I don't believe anything can stand without a strong foundation. And Akron, Ohio was the perfect foundation for my musical experience. And this is all I've ever done, Socket. I've never done anything else. And so, like, you know, it's I've been very, very blessed. And
you really have. And all those names, for people who aren't familiar with gospel, all those names that you just dropped, that you had an opportunity to work with at such a young age, I mean, you were like going to the University of Gospel at that point. You had, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Your mama, she hooked it up. But let me ask you this. Before that, I mean, like, okay, so did you come from the kind of household, because there was the foundation was in gospel, that you guys couldn't listen to any other kind of music? Like, did you, like, ever, like, sneak and listen to some other kind of music, some R&B or whatever, when moms weren't around?
No, we weren't restricted from R&B music. We weren't. It wasn't the kind of household where you only listen. You can't listen to nothing but gospel music. It wasn't like that at all.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit every once in a while. But what I want to know is, what was your first R&B influence then? Like, who do you remember listening to saying, I want to sound like them, I like them, I can do that?
Well, my first people, the introduction as far as listening to people vocally and all that kind of stuff is concerned, you know, it's like people like, you know, Sam Cooke, you know, with Chain Gang you know, of course, Stevie Wonder, you know, back then he was little Stevie Wonder, and, you know, Temptations. You know, all the way back in the day, Smokey Robinson, The Miracles, and you know, we used to have my grandmother used to have every holiday was spent at my mom's mom, my grandma Fitzhugh, was my mom's mom, and every holiday was spent over there barbecuing, and in the garage we used to spend the 45s and the whole thing, and all my sisters were older than me. I was like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, you know, but, you know, we would listen to everything, everything we listened to, the Supremes, Martha Vandella, a whole bunch of, we were exposed to all types of music.
Okay, all right, so now, because you have such a beautiful tenor voice, were you particularly influenced by tenors like Smokey and Eddie Kendricks and like that? Did their voices particularly speak to you, or did you even realize that you were a tenor when you were that young?
that young, I didn't realize, I didn't know tenor from baritone to whatever. It was just, you know, I just know what I dug, and I love Smokey's voice, you know, and really, 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 as far as a pure tenor is concerned, I loved Eddie Kendrick's voice, and you know, and it was. You know, a lot of different stuff. I mean, I remember even listening to a lot of Jerry Butler, you know, back in the day. And, you know, we were exposed to a lot. I was exposed to a lot of different types of music. I mean, I went through my whole thing of wanting to sound like Stevie at one point, you know, when I started singing. Wanted to sound like Stevie, and then I went through the whole situation wanting to sound like Donny Hathaway, you know, and then I went through my period and wanted to sound like, you know, Marvin Gaye. But then at an early age, like, you know, 14, 15, 16, you know, I started realizing that, you know, the thing that makes these people unique is the fact that they are unique, that they are, when you heard Stevie, you knew it was Stevie. When you heard Donnie, you knew that was Donny Hathaway.
Right.
And the same,
right.
and the same with Marvin Gaye. So at that point in my life, when I was about 15, 16 years old, I started saying, okay, what I want is to develop a specific sound, a certain sound, so that at some point somebody's going to say, hey, I want to sound like Howard Hewitt. You know what I'm saying? So
At that point,
I started taking all my influences through the years with Sam Cooke, with Jerry Butler, with Stevie Wonder, with Eddie Kendricks, with Smokey, with, you know, Marvin and the whole thing. And I started rolling all those things up into one thing, and then putting Howard Hewitt in there, putting my own situation in there, going from, you know, figuring out how to go from that natural smoothly into the falsetto, and
right.
You know, without the break, without that specific break, figuring out how to, you know, caress that falsetto, caress that tenor, however you want, whatever you want to call it, and make it something smooth, make it something, you know, that people can embrace and people can you know, make you feel what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
So, you know, yeah. So it was.
And
it
I'm gonna
all,
tell you,
was,
you got that figured out, Howard. Listen, let me tell you that. Nobody ever told you that before. I want you to know you got that figured out to a T. Okay.
Well, I thank you. I mean, I always say I'm still a work in progress. You know what I'm saying? Even at this time, I thank God for, you know, for everything that He's allowed me to develop and perfect and the whole thing, but. You know, you never quit learning. You never quit figuring stuff out. You know that once you do that, it's time to lay down and check out of here. So, you know, I'm not near ready to do that.
I heard that, and you're right. It's all about reinvention, especially in these days and times. Okay, so a few minutes ago, you were getting ready to tell us about embarking, coming to L.A., $34. So let's hear a little bit about that, how you started, you know, on your career, you know, after leaving gospel, I guess.
Well, at the time, I left the gospel field when I was about 14 years old, when I was still in Ohio. And we started a group, my partners and I started a group called Life. We spelled it LYFE. And we were cold blood. We were like six or seven. At one point, we were six members, and then we had seven members, and we were funky. We were some funky young men, you know. And it was
mm-hmm.
like everything that you know, George Clinton, Parliament, Funkadelic put out there. We were on top of it, but we were proteges of this group, one of the groups in Akron, because Akron, like I said, Ohio, throughout Ohio, you look at. You know, musicians and groups and everybody that came out of Ohio, the Ohio Players.
So much
plays.
Funk came out of the Ohio. So
but,
much.
But it was not even just funk, Chocolate. It was like, you know, like Devo. you know, that group that
they're from
Akron, Ohio. Chrissy Hines and the Pretenders, they're from Akron, Ohio, you know, and there was so much music, and there was a group that we used to, that we were like the proteges of this group that was in Akron. It was this group, it was a band, it was called Revelation Funk, you know, and we used to see Revelation Funk in my high school gymnasium, you know, for a battle of the bands. They used to go up against the Ohio Players all the time, and for $1.50, we would see the Ohio Players and Revelation Funk go up against each other. Revelation Funk had a keyboard player at the time that played keyboards in the same background because he didn't consider himself a lead singer, right? And his name was James Ingram. you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I met James when I was like 14, 15 years old, you know, and so, like, you know, that's the kind of background, you know, as far as Akron. That's why I say Akron was such a great foundation, you know, and, you know, so I went into the R&B situation at 14, and then I stayed in Akron and then finally left Akron. My cousin actually moved to California, and he said, "Man, when I go to California, I'm gonna call you in a year, and you come out, you know, you come out to California, right?" And so, like, in a year, almost exactly a year, he calls me, right? And long story short, because we could get into a whole other how the process went down, but long story short, I jump on a plane. I got enough money in my pocket to buy a one-way ticket to L.A. And after I bought my one-way ticket, you know, I had about $34 left in my pocket. My cousin picked me up at the airport. We went up and rode up, you know, La Cienega to Sunset and made that left on Sunset and, you know, went up into Beverly Hills and looked over the valley with all the lights and everything. And, you know,
right,
we're gonna conquer this city, right? And then we came out of Beverly Hills, back down Sunset, made the right on La Cienega, going south on La Cienega Boulevard. Everybody that's from LA knows what I'm talking about. You go south
that's
on
right.
La Cienega Boulevard and past the airport to the hood. I mean to the hood and like, you know, Van Ness and Century and all that kind of stuff up there. So, you know, I mean, but I had a ball. I was like 19, 20 years old. I was like, I had no responsibilities, no kids, no wife, no nothing. And that's when I started my thing. A couple months after I got there, I went down. I hooked up with a partner of mine that was playing bass. He used to play bass for Revelation Funk, but because Revelation Funk went out to California also a couple years before I went out there, but they broke up. And and so, like, you know, the cat that played bass, this cat, T. Tucker, he was playing bass for a show group that was put together by these people at this establishment down in the Crenshaw District called Maverick's Flat, right? And
where is that? Maverick's Flat.
Yeah, Maverick's Flat. That's where it's at. That was their slogan. And John Daniels and Alonzo Daniels were the owners of it at the time. And they, you know, on the weekend, it was a club, you know, the dance club, everybody, all the Soul Train people, everybody used to come down to Mavericks on every weekend. Yeah,
everybody.
And what was the trip was that they never had, you know, I don't know whether it was too expensive or whatever, but John never had a liquor license, right? And so Mavericks never sold liquor back in the day, you know, back when I came here. So they used to have these fruit smoothie drinks that they would make back in the back. But everybody used to be there. You could look out in the audience at Mavericks Flat on the weekend, on any given weekend. For one thing, you see all the Soul Train people there.
That's right.
You can see Richard Pryor sitting in the audience. You can see Chaka Khan sitting in the audience, or Lionel Richie or the Commodores, the people from Earth, Wind and Fire, Ralph Johnson and everybody, you know, would hang out down there. So I went down there about a month or a month and a half after I got out to California. I hooked up with Chief. He told me to come down and hang out with him, and he was rehearsing with this group that was put together by Maverick Scott. It's called Love Machine, and you know,
right.
seven beautiful women, young women, and you remember Kathy Bradley, who was the first black model on The Price is Right. She was with Love Machine at the time, and all of you know, on the weekend, like I said, you know, Mavericks was like a club, but on the weekdays, it was like, you know, upstairs were the rehearsal rooms. We rehearsed downstairs on the little stage, and upstairs was also the offices for the booking agency that they had. And all of their bookings were overseas. Everything was overseas. Nobody hardly played here in the States that was
mm-hmm.
put together by Mavericks. So, you know, I went down there. I met John Daniels, Alonzo Daniels. And, like, you know, long story short, we started talking. And we put together a group. We put together a show group called Beverly Hills. And we did Beverly Hills. We did top 40 stuff, everything from Disco Inferno to Mandy, right? And so, like, you know, we put it together, worked it out, and worked the show whenever we would put a show together that we wanted to try out on an audience, then we would try out. We would work. We would play down there at Maverick's Flat on the weekend. And
right.
once we put the show, the group together, and put the shows together that we wanted to do, then Mavericks booked us overseas. So I went overseas for about a year with the Beverly Hills. The group, the name of the group was called Beverly Hills, and it was a top 40 show group. And we went overseas. We played every place from Helsinki, Finland, to Geneva, Switzerland, Saint Tropez, France, Benidorm, Spain, all over the place. Right. So
that was good for doing that, for sending folks over there in Europe, which was a good thing because, you know, most of them were young and had never been anywhere before. So this was a, you know, it was a good opportunity for them to do that. So now I want to fast forward a little bit because our time is running out, and I want to find out how you got hooked up with Shalamar and Dick Griffey, and how did that start?
Okay, so like I said, Maverick Flat, all the Soul Train people used to come down to Maverick Flat, you know, every weekend. So that's where I first met Jeffrey and Jody before Shalamar existed, right? They would come down there, they'd dance on top of the table, the counter, the whole thing, because Mavericks was a real homey place, right?
Right.
So I went overseas, like I said, with the group, with the show group, came back, and we broke up after about a year or so, and when I got back, I was kind of kicking around L.A., and I started working with this cat, Jeffrey Bowen, who was a producer over in Motown. He produced a lot of the Temptation stuff, a lot of the Commodore
right.
stuff. He used to produce Bonnie Pointer also and a bunch of people. He was doing this record. He was doing this project on Eddie Hazel, the cat that used to play guitar for Parliament Funkadelic.
Right.
So he was putting this project together. And I was working on it with him for about a couple of months, and we started, you know, for the first month and a half, everything was cool as far as, like, you know, checks and being compensated for the time that you spent in the studio the whole time. But then,
right.
when they started back in the day, I know they've gotten a lot better now with the way they take care of everything, but back in the day, they started doing this thing that we used to call back in the day, the Motown runaround. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So like, you know, checks started coming in a little short, less than the time that, not reflecting the time that we had spent in the studio, the whole thing. And I remember one day, it had gotten to a point where I called a meeting with Jeffrey Bowen and his co-producer, Angela Bond. And my girl at the time worked for worked for Don Cornelius at the Soul Train Dance Studio. And so I took her to work and dropped her off at work and told her I'm on my way to the Motown building. That's when they were up on Sunset and Argyle, right?
Right.
And so I said, I'm on my way to the Motown building. And, you know, and I would pick her up from work later on, right? And so, like, I go to the Motown building, and up there I go up to the 15th floor where Jeffrey Bowen's office was. And so I get in, we're talking, I'm getting this stuff off my chest, you know, you guys are going for this, Motown runaround, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the phone rang, right? The phone rings, and Angelo Bonney, he answers the phone, picks up the phone, and he says, he looks at me, he says, it's for you, right? And I said, like, well, if it's my lady, you know, tell her that I'll call her back, you know, when I'm done with the meeting. He said, well, it's not a lady, you know, it's a guy. He said, it sounds like it's long distance, right? That's
mm-hmm.
back in the day. That's back in the day.
No
before
cell phone.
So no cell phone. So you could tell someone was long distance with that, right? So it got all the static on the line. So,
right.
So, like, I get on the phone, and it's Jeffrey Daniels from Shalimar, right? They were, at that point, Shalimar came into existence when I was overseas with the show group. And so they had the first single they had out was this tune called Uptown Festival, which was a medley of old Motown hits. And then the second single that they released was called Take That to the Bank, right? So
right.
This cat, Gerald Brown, was the lead singer. But Take That to the Bank, because actually this cat Gary Mumford sang Uptown Festival tune. Gerald Brown sang the Take That to the Bank. So those were already two lead singers that Shalimar had, as in all of their existence. So, but I get on the phone and it's Jeffrey Daniels. You know, they were in the middle of a promotional tour. They were on the East Coast in New York and. And I guess they got into a thing between them and Gerald Brown. And Gerald says, well, when you and Dick Griffey see it my way, you know, give me a call and I'll we'll try and work it out. And he jumps on a plane and leaves them out on the road in the middle of a promotional tour with no lead singer. So, instead of calling him, Jeffrey decides to track me down, and he know because they had seen the shows that I had done with the show group when I was down at Maverick's flat.
Right.
So what they did was he called my lady who worked for Don Cornelius to find out where I was. She told me
track your butt down, didn't he?
Yeah, tracked it down. Tracked me down all the way up. Into the office at the thing, and so like, so this is on a Friday. This is on a Friday, right? So he calls me, and so I get on the phone, and like he says, you know, goes through the whole thing. He says we want to offer you an equal position in the group as lead singer, and blah 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 blah. He said you're at the Motown building, right? I said yeah. He said where are you? I said I'm up on the 15th floor. He said well, Solar's office. You know, at the time, Solar was the record company that they were with. He said their office is on the 9th floor in that same building, you know. And he said, like, if you go down to the 9th floor and go to the office and talk to Dick Griffey, he will reiterate everything that we just talked about that I just offered you and the whole thing. So, you know, I get off the phone, right? And so I tell the guys, I tell Jeffrey Bowen and Angelo Bond what the deal, you know, what the phone call was about. And I remember this like it was yesterday. Angelo says, man, Shalimar is nothing but a fly-by-night disco group, man. You don't want to get involved with them. You know, Solar will never be a Motown, and blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I listen to them, you know, what they're saying and the whole thing. And then when they get done, I look at them, I say, look, I said, well, I'm parked on the street. And so I need to go put some money in the meter, right? And so I leave and I go down to the ninth floor and I talk to Dick Griffey. He reiterates everything that Jeffrey said. And like I told him, I said, well, you know, you have to give me a night, you know, to give these people upstairs, you know, give these people a chance to rectify themselves, because even though I hadn't signed contracts with the people upstairs, it was still my word. You know, my word is worth more than any contract I could ever sign. And so, like I said, you know, so I left and I called the people over at Motown. And I said, look, if you guys want to rectify this, give me a call. I'll be home all night long, right? Nobody calls, right? So Saturday morning, I go over to Dick Griffey's house, and I watch a video of a Shalimar show, right? And I watch that. When the video goes off, I remember sitting in this rocking chair, and Dick Griffey says, well, sing something for me. Jeffrey and Jody say you're a great singer. Sing something for me. And I said, well, just sing something right here, a cappella. He said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, well, I said to myself, I said, well, Lord, you know, me and you, right? And I broke into Feel the Fire by Peebo Bryson, right?
Uh-oh, that was, you shot with both lines that time.
Yeah, and then I got through the first verse and half the hook. Dick says, okay, I'll be right back, right? He goes upstairs and he comes back down and has $500 cash, right?
Mm-hmm.
$500. He said, here's some money. You know, leave with your old lady, leave it to pay some bills. You know, and then he goes in the other pocket and says, here's an airline ticket. You got to catch the red eye out tonight. Let me say that was back in the day, Chaka, when, like, anybody can ride on anybody's ticket. I could ride on your ticket. It didn't matter if my name was on the ticket or anything.
He said,
here's an airline ticket. You got to catch the red eye out tonight. Meet the group in New Jersey, which was Sunday morning. He said, you have to rehearse the lip sync and the choreography to take that to the bank. He said, because Monday you have a TV show to do. And that's exactly how it went down, baby. It was like, it was, you know, Friday I got the offer. Saturday I went over, I guess I did a little lightweight audition. It was called a lightweight audition at Dick's crib. Saturday night I was on the plane to New Jersey and met them in New Jersey. We rehearsed all day. You know, I got there Sunday morning. We rehearsed the listening choreography to take that to the bank. Next day we did this little local dance show, TV dance show that was in Paterson, New Jersey. And from there on, finished out the rest of the promotional tour, and then came back to L.A. and recorded the Big Fun album the second time around and all that stuff on it. And as they say, you know, the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Okay, yeah. I heard that. So now, let's talk about what you're doing right now. What's going on with Howard Hewitt right now?
Well, right now I'm having a real good time. I for the last like few years or so, three, four, even longer than that, you know. But I really got back into my personal appearances and stuff. I'm enjoying, you know, getting in front of my audiences as much as possible. But now I'm in the midst now of like recording first. You know, the first studio album I've had out in a long time, about three or four years. So, I mean, I started this company called Incendiary Entertainment Group with four other people. And, you know, we're embracing music, the music situation in all different kind of ways, not just through, you know, music and recording, but through TV, film, and the whole thing. And so we're starting out with my first project, and we've already put two singles out. First single was called You Still Live Inside of Me, which I kind of explored my country roots on that one. And which was amazing. the result of it was a very amazing tune. And then we just recently put out a tune called Better Guy, and it's produced by Steve Russell from Troop, and he and I and this cat DJ Jeff, we wrote the lyrics to it. And in the meantime, I'm finishing up the album. I got a lot of great stuff on there. You know, I'm about maybe 5 or 6 tunes deep into the album, so I got another 5 or 6 to go before I'm done. And my son Christopher, a great musician, Christopher Hewitt, but he goes by Christopher Hazel, Hayzel.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Great musician. He and I are doing a couple things on there, and I'm just having a good time with that. Having a great time with that.
Okay, so in other words, you are keeping the music alive and authentic and doing what you do, and we're so glad about it. Howard Hewitt fans are so glad about it because we need, we need you out there still doing exactly what you're doing. Now, I'm going to play after the interview. Everybody hold on because we're going to be playing Howard songs that he just mentioned, his 2 new songs, Better Guy and You Still Live Inside of Me. You Still Live
yep.
Inside of Me. We're going to be playing
yep.
those. So do you have any advice for anybody that's up and coming right now? Any artist,
well,
like, what would you tell your son? And by the way, I saw your son in your video.
Oh, yeah, he was in the
mm-hmm.
in the You Still Live Inside Me video.
Right.
And he has music on iTunes, and also it's under a group that he put together called Ellis, Ellis. And you can go check him out. You can check him out on Enjoy, Enjoy, Ellis, Ellis.com.
Okay.
And, get to all his music and stuff. And my stuff, of course, is Incendiarious entertainmentgroup.com. Also, Howard Hewitt fan page on Facebook, facebook.com/Howard Hewitt fan page, and that'll guide you all the way to the rest of the Instagram and
right,
the Twitter
right.
pages and all that kind of stuff
and all that
and,
other stuff.
Oh, and social. Social media now is very, very important. I mean, that's
yes,
what's happening
it is.
Now. And it's such a I'm enjoying it so much. I mean, it's it's like a wild, wild west out there. You can do all kind of stuff, man, and you don't have to have that that major record company looking over your shoulder with all this bureaucracy
and that
and that
Motown run around.
You don't deal with that anymore. So
mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing. I tell young people trying to get into the business. That story I told about the whole situation as far as the Friday I got the offer to join Shalimar. Saturday I did the little lightweight audition. Saturday night I'm on the plane. I meet the group in New Jersey Sunday. Rehearsed the whole thing Sunday, Monday, we're in front of a camera on a TV show, and like I said, the rest is history. Now,
right.
when I tell that story, I tell it specifically sometimes with young kids to let them know that, because when I'm talking to them and stuff, I say, well, what do you believe one of the most important things as far as like making it in this business is concerned? And a lot of times, the kids will say, well, you got to be in the right place at the right time. Which is true. It's a very that's a very important thing, and it's a very common type of saying. Got to be in the right place at the right time. But there's another part, Saga, to that saying that a lot
there
of people
is.
Never say, and they never really acknowledge, and that is that you have to be in the right place at the right time and be prepared.
Be ready. Don't get ready. Stay ready.
Yeah, stay ready. You got to
stay ready.
You got to stay prepared. So if you sing, then every chance you get, sing. Every opportunity you get, sing. If you act, every opportunity you get, act. Because you get, act, do something. Because you never know who's listening. You You never know who's watching. You know, today, as far as music is concerned, it is a lot of the visual situation as far as music is concerned. So you never know who's listening. You never know who's watching. And if nobody's listening and nobody's watching, at least every time you do it, you get better and better and better at your skill and what you're trying to do. And,
absolutely,
you know, that's a very important thing. And also, this business, you know, has the tendency, again, it has the power to, like, take you from, you know, from this genre of music to that genre of music to that genre of music, the whole thing. And before you know it, you could not only, you know, be in so many different, be blown in so many different directions that you not only lose your audience, but you can lose yourself also.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So what I tell a lot of kids trying to break into, be true to who you are. Be true to the type of artist that you want to be, and be true to that. Don't get swayed from that whole situation. I mean, don't be so rigid that you can't, you know, experience and incorporate certain things in your music, but always know what type of artist you are and that you want to be.
Stay ready.
And stay ready.
Stay
ready.
Okay. All right. Well, that's words of wisdom right there, my brother. So you got any shout-outs right quick? I know that, I want to say, too, that you're in Atlanta. You got a gig in Atlanta tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the thing for me actually is go do the sound check real quick and then come back and go for a minute before I have to go to work.
Okay, well, you got some shout-outs right quick?
Oh, shout-out to all the people who've been listening all these years, Shaka, all the loyal fans and the loyal, you know, listeners of the music. We've had some a great journey together, and we still got a whole lot more journey to go, you know, but you know, I shout out to you and thank you for all your love and your support. And also Keisha Johnson, who is, you know, head of all my social media
right.
situation in Dayton, Ohio. She keeps everything rolling as far as, like, you know, keeping everybody informed on what's happening, keeping me informed and keeping me involved so that I can be, you know, I can be a part of everything, and you know, because I am a big part of the whole process that goes on the fan page, on the Instagram, on the and as far as Twitter is concerned, and you know, Bernadette Holder, who's my PR person, everybody over here, and Incendiary Entertainment Group, we got a lot of work to do, but you know, we got a lot of passion going on there too. So,
and that's all you need.
Yep.
That is
yep.
all you need, that passion. And I was going to shout out to Bernadette, too. And I just want to say, as far as I'm concerned, for me, any information you want, All Things Chocolate, PatriceChocolateBanks.com. I want to thank my family, the Facebook Nation, all the Funkalutionaries, Greg Williford, Double C, Cece Cameron. She's the one that hooked this whole thing up. Her and Bernadette have been talking, I think, for about a month trying to get this interview to happen. So got to definitely count her out. That's my girl. I want to shout out Beverly Black Johnson and Tribe Family, Tribe Family Channel. Everybody is excited on Tribe Family Channel. And I want to say until next week, God bless everybody, and may the funk be with all y'all. And I want to tell you, Howard, that have a go and knock them ladies out. Do they still throw panties up on stage anymore? Because if they do, you would be one of the persons that they would be throwing them at. Do they do that?
we still have a lot of fun. We still have a whole lot of fun. Come to the shows and find out. You know, that would be good.
Okay, well, the next time you are anywhere near Los Angeles, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be there, okay? I'm going to be
November 21st, myself and the Whispers will be at the Grove in Anaheim together. November 21st. So yeah.
Everybody got that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. November 21st at the Grove in Anaheim. I'll see everybody
All
there.
Right. Well, you have a good sound check and knock them out tonight. And thank you so much. And we're getting ready to play your new music now. We're going to go out on your new music. I think we're starting out with Better Guy and go through and do some Shalamar stuff and Say Amen. And Beverly Zach Johnson is the creator of Tribe Family Channel. Her favorite one is Show Me. And we're doing Say Amen for Cece Cannon. So I got all that in. So thank you, Howard. And I hope to talk to you again real soon. And again, may the funk continue to be with you, my brother.
God bless you, Doctor. Take
all care. Right. All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
Every tear that he made you cry. Thousand times better guy.
From the outside looking in, time and time again, I see you in pain. Still your love you're giving him. What's going on? How can you give him your love when
he don't need you, what you need?
Oh.
He don't need you, what you want.
Girl, you need love, and I got that love that you need, girl.
Show you how much I love you, Candace. I was priceless.
take trips around the world. Baby, just think, you and me, floating on the Caribbean sea. So it's tragic, I can just feel the heat. And there's candlelight with the moon so high, hanging in a Spanish sky. But before
thank you. goodbye for now. We'll have our second time around. But before I go, there's something I'd like to say. Everything's not what it seems. There's a stronger force behind the scenes. He's in our lives every day. He's right there when you call. In Him is where my strength lies. I lift my eyes beyond the sky. Only He can save my life, and only He can hear my cry. I wanna thank You, God, for giving me one more chance to raise my voice and to sing Your praise. I sing it out loud. I sing it all day. Give me Your love. You give me Your Son. Oh, 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 oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, it is. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. I know there's some who don't believe. Sometimes it's very hard to see. You live this whole life. Some things don't go your way. But to be without is not His will, no. There's cattle on a thousand hills, and they're all Yours to claim. Just claim for me this holy name. See, you don't have to beg or call, no. He can see you standing proud and tall. Yes, He can. He'll give us everlasting love.
Yeah.
No, I never loved anyone the way that I loved you. Took a year and two relationships just to find no one can love me like you do. But something died inside and I can't hide the way I feel. Try to make myself believe it wasn't really real. There's so many feelings I just can't erase. I try to hide it, but it's written on my face. You know the hardest part about losing you is not knowing what went wrong. But I guess somewhere along the way we lost our faith. Couldn't seem to work it out, but now you're gone. And this so many feelings I just can't erase. I try to hide it, but it's written on my face. I can't fool anyone. Heaven knows how many times I've tried. Anyone can plainly see you still live inside of me. You live inside of me, and I won't stop believing we were meant to be. Yeah. 'Cause I don't wanna face.
tried to bring you.